You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 5th of May, 2017, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. We've finally got the software fixed. You should be able to listen to us live once again. That was a real nightmare, and it looks like it's fixed now, so hopefully people will let me know in the chat room. If it's not me having problems, it's Dennis having problems, but thankfully I don't think he's had any this week. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Let's hope not. Can you hear me all right, yeah?
Yeah, you're sounding good. Sounding very good.
I'm going to declare war tonight. I've got a new microphone, so I feel like Neville Chamberlain.
Yeah, you're sounding really good. I'm sure people will notice the improvement. Just before we begin, I wanted to let people know about a really good article that's over at Countercurrents. It's written by Richard Edmonds, the longtime nationalist. We've interviewed him before at Radio Aryan. We like to publicise his stuff when he does it. And he's written a fantastic essay here called The Continuation of the World Wars by Other Means. And it goes into all the deceit that has gone on and the lies that have been told about Germany and the breaking of the law, basically. If we get the time in tonight's episode, we might have a look at that. But I know we've also got lots of other things that you want to talk about, Dennis, as well. So in case we don't get the chance to have a look at this, just let people know once again, it's called The Continuation of the World Wars by Other Means. It's by Richard Edmonds, and it's on the front page at Countercurrents. Yeah, Dennis, you've been looking at some really interesting stuff this week from what you were telling me earlier.
Yeah, I've been really deep in research this week. And to be quite honest, I can remember reading a YouTube comment the other day saying, "Oh, Mr. Wise, you're always blaming the Jews on everything." And actually, it's worse than he thinks.
They are responsible for everything.
Well, the more I research, you know, the worse it gets. Because at one point, I mean, people said to me once over, like, that, you know, with the Illuminati and the research going on there, which was behind the French Revolution, well, it's worse than that. I mean, it goes further back, and even to the point where even I hadn't realised that the English Revolution was down to collaboration between Cromwell and the Jews, and it just goes on. And so, like I said, how deep this is all going to go, nobody knows. But I mean, it's certainly it's interesting, to say the least.
Well, I think they've had a hand in just about every revolution there's been since that infamous one in Judea, where the Romans ended up having to destroy Herod's temple and kick them out of Judea. That was a revolution against Rome, and ever since then, they have been at the source of all these revolutions. And I can only think of two revolutions that actually were better afterwards for the people involved. And both of those were peaceful revolutions. And that one of those was the National Socialist Revolution of Germany, and the other one was the Green Revolution of Libya. And there wasn't a shot fired. And they turned out, they worked. And both of those excluded Jews. Maybe that's a clue.
Yeah. That's interesting, because I was just going, I'm wondering then which you were going to say, because everyone that I've been researching, it's been a bloodbath. All roads have led to Israel, or all the flow of blood, should I say, is, you know, leads to Israel eventually. But yeah, that's quite true about the two you mentioned.
Well, E. Michael Jones in particular, he's written a very good book, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and Its Impact on World History, I think it's called. And it really does show that, their influence on world history. He calls it world history, but it's really their influence on Europeans. It's their influence on Europe, their influence on Christendom, their influence on the white race, because they don't do these things when they're out there in Turkey and Saudi Arabia. They basically stir the Turks and the Saudi Arabians up to attack us. It is only white people that they set these revolutions up and try to take down. And in amidst all the chaos, they end up putting themselves in charge, basically. I mean, you mentioned the French Revolution just then, Dennis, and it was the French Revolution that emancipated the Jew. Up until that point, they were different to right. everyone else. And then they made them citizens after the French Revolution, and then all the other countries followed suit.
Yeah, well, I felt I wasn't really educated enough school on Napoleon, to be quite honest. All I knew was what I was told, that he was just another tin pot dictator. But he was even worse in some ways, because he was the one who freed up the Jews from Europe, and even tried to take Palestine, I believe, for the Jews to inhabit. But eventually they must have turned on him, because he died, in poverty on an island under the British. So, that's not a surprise to me. But what was a surprise was how much he was in favour of the Jews, and he was a Freemason, of course.
Yeah, so he must have turned against him at the end. I think the Jews, yeah. Do they hold him up as a hero? I think I've heard somewhere that they were anti-Napoleon. Maybe they were anti-Napoleon.
Yeah, for some reason, yeah. I mean, I suppose it's a bit like Stalin. He turned on at the end as well. I found some interesting information on Stalin and all, but being Jewish and coming, his name actually meaning the name of an island from Persia, which was apparently a lot of Portuguese Jews had been sent to, and ended up in Georgia. So, and that's from an interesting book. I'll get you the name of it shortly.
That's interesting, because a lot of people say, oh, the Stalin's real name, its surname, it means son of a Jew or whatever. And they say, well, the Jewish word in Georgia, it's a different word for Jew. And you've got a completely different reference there that points out that Stalin is a Jew.
So, yeah, I've got a good actual good reference point. It's on page 55 of The Library of Political Secrets by Maurice Pinet. And you can find this on the internet, and it's quite an interesting book, actually. And like I say, his real name, I'll probably not get this right, but
Dagashvili or something, sorry? Isn't it? Dagashvili,
yeah,
something
like that. Means son of Jew, which is DJOU, and Jew, as it's, I think that's pronounced, is a small island in Persia where many of the banished Portuguese Moreno Jews migrated and were later settled. They were banished there, and they were later settled in Georgia in Russia. Yeah, Library of Political Secrets, Maurice Pinet.
That settles the confusion there, then. The name wasn't referring to Jew in Georgia, it was referring to the country that he came from, the island that he came from. Maurice Pinet is a well-known Catholic researcher as well, isn't he? Against the Church? I think that's one of his.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So I've read some fascinating stuff on accounts of his. It doesn't surprise me, Stalin being a Jew, because I always felt he was, and I always felt he was a Freemason as well, and there's quite some evidence I found out in the previous documentary that he joined Freemasonry through the Grand Orient Lodge in France, which, as Lenin did, because it don't require belief in a supreme being. There's no way on earth, I've always said, there's no way on earth that Stalin would live in a country and dictate that country with a secret society going on, which he had no idea about, or he knew of, but didn't know their intentions. Just it would have just been impossible. And so I find that hard to believe that he wasn't a Freemason.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain he would have been as well. They all are. Even if he wasn't, before he took power, as soon as he did take power, he would have been. Because they would have been courting him and trying to get him to become a Freemason. It's interesting that he turned against the Jews, Napoleon turned against the Jews, even Martin Luther turned against the Jews. And every one of these people were really enamoured of them, of the Jews at one point, and were talking about how wonderful they are and working for them.
Well, it's either they're turning against them, or as the Jews have openly stated many times in their writings, that the best of the Goyim should perish. So maybe they turn on them. That could be a problem as well, But certainly these people in the New World Order today who were openly supporting them, I could name quite a few from America, will rue the day, I'm quite sure, because this is how they work.
Well, I'm sure they will. I think we're going to go into some of this tonight about the people turning on them and the people leaving. I know this is referenced in one of the letters that was sent to Oliver Cromwell. Now, you were talking about the English Revolution there and the links that the Jews had with that. Do you want to go into some of that and we can discuss some of that?
Yeah, you've made me move the thing now. I found it now. Here we go, I think. Here we go. Yeah, I'm not sure if you know of this, but there was a letter which actually went missing, or some letters went missing during the Napoleonic Wars, which rose later with writings from Cromwell, actual writings from Cromwell to a Jew called Pratt, Ebenezer Pratt, which sounds like a good Jewish name. And one of the letters actually says, in return for financial support, we'll advocate admission of Jews to England. This, however, is impossible while Charles living. Charles cannot be executed without trial. Adequate grounds for what do not present. Adequate grounds for which do not at present exist. Therefore, advise that Charles be assassinated, but will have nothing to do with arrangements for procuring an assassin, though willing to help in his escape. I'm not sure if you know these two. Well, did Charles escape at some point?
Well, Charles the First, he didn't escape. Cromwell had him executed. Just to go back there to the bit where you said that the guy's name was Pratt, that he must have stolen that name. He must have been pretending to be English or something, because Pratt is like Brit. The P, R and the T, the P and the B are interchangeable. So the word Pratt itself, the surname Pratt, actually comes from Brit, like Britain. So he must have stolen that surname.
Well, it says here that this evidence was absolutely convicts Oliver Cromwell for participating in the Jewish Revolution. Plot was obtained by Lord Alfred Douglas, who edited a weekly review, Plain English, published by the Northern British Publishing Company. In an article which appeared in the issue of September 3rd, 1921, he explained how his friend, Mr. L.D. van Valkert of Amsterdam, Holland, had come in possession of these missing volumes of records of the synagogue of Mugen.
Satan.
Well, the writing's a little bit smaller. L-J-E-I-M. This volume has been lost during the Napoleonic Wars. The volume contains records of letters written to and answered by the directors of the synagogue. So obviously this Jewish synagogue has a to and fro with Cromwell, apparently. And they were written in German. One entry was dated June 16th. Which was between Oliver Cromwell to Ebenezer Pratt. So,
well, I think the suspicion has always been there that he was helped by the Jews, because one of the first things they did once they'd got rid of the king, once they'd murdered the king, which was against all laws, then Cromwell started agitating to bring the Jews back into Britain, and he wanted to bring over this famous Jewish publisher called Manasseh ben Israel, who had been messing around with Hebrew copies of the Old Testament and trying to produce his own versions of the Bible, because at the time there was all this Bible printing going on and these Jews were sponsoring a lot of this and twisting the translations. And this is why the Catholics didn't want the Bible to come out in English. They wanted it to stay in the Latin that it had been in for centuries, millennia. And these Jews were sending out all these corrupted versions of the Old Testament. And these Protestants that they had in England had got hold of this Old Testament, and they were reading it and taking it right out of context and thinking that the Jews were these wonderful people. And if only the Jews could come over and see a proper Christian country like England, then the Jews would all become Christians and then Jesus would come back. And these Jews played on this and they encouraged it. And this was one of the reasons why the English people wanted these Jews to come back, because they thought that the Jews would become Christians. Of course, the Jews were just thinking, these stupid idiot goyim, don't they know we killed Christ? You know, and this Manasseh ben Israel, he wrote letters to Cromwell. I've been going through this letter that he wrote today. It's just incredible. He's saying that all the Jews are able to do is trafficking. They're just able to be merchants. They're forced to be merchants because at any moment they might get kicked out of the country that they're in. But they're not kicked out for doing bad things. It's just they don't understand why they get kicked out, because they're so helpful to the countries that but they can't farm, they can't work, they can't invent. Because all they can do is trafficking. But they're very good for augmenting taxes, very good for putting up the toll prices, and they're very good at getting customs duties out of people. It's all these really loathsome activities, and this Manasseh ben Israel thinks that these are really good, positive things, and that the country is going to love them. Such a slimy character. And if you look at the name, Manasseh ben Israel, Manasseh was one of the tribes of Israel, and Israel is obviously Israel. You couldn't get more obvious that he's trying to say, hey, I'm one of the people of the Old Testament. You can trust me. And Cromwell obviously did. And he ended up killing our king. He ended up invading Ireland, invading Scotland. He butchered tens of thousands of people. People in Ireland to this day are still furious at Cromwell. And I think 10 years after his death, we dug him up out of the grave. We beheaded him. We hanged him, stuck his head on a pike as a warning to people. You know, this is not the way to behave. And if you look at that, what he did, I mean, it's just typical Jewish behaviour, really, isn't it?
Well, you're quite right about the red flag with me was the invasion of Ireland and the massacre of Catholics, because of this ongoing war, which I found to be going on even right up to today with the Catholic Church. I mean, the Catholic Church at the moment is probably, for the most part in history now, at its lowest point, being infiltrated with a Jesuit pope in charge who preaches the New World Order. It's been totally infiltrated, and many Catholics are disillusioned with the Catholic Church, and quite rightly so. This goes back all the way, like I said, Michael Jones hits a nail on the head when he says it's from the foot of the cross. And when you look at Cromwell and how he went into Ireland, was probably doing a great favour for these Jews. And since that time as well, the main wars and the revolutions, the church has suffered unbelievably. I mean, I think I mentioned the other week about the revolution in Mexico, which was a new one on me, but also I've been looking, not fully researched on it yet, but looking into the Spanish Revolution. And amazingly, at one point, do you know what Franco called that war?
I don't know. What did he call it?
I'll tell you for free. This is a war between Spain and the Soviet Union.
So he knew what was going on then.
Oh yeah, so Stalin apparently was the bankers were financing through Stalin. Stalin was the front man who was financing the Bolsheviks in Spain. Like I said, there many priests and Catholics suffered, especially when they took Madrid, the Real Madrid, for quite some time, and the persecutions were laid out thick and fast.
Well, this is a pattern that obviously, it goes back earlier. E. Michael Jones has traced it with it happening in Poland and other countries. But if we roll it back to when it happened in England, when Cromwell then went after the Catholics and they got rid of Charles I. But even after Cromwell died, there was still this influence. This Charles II came in, and he was looked at as the king by the Scots, and the Scots had helped Cromwell, but still Cromwell went up there and invaded them and attacked them, and Charles II became king, but he was really a puppet. And then after that, they brought in this Dutch king, William of Orange. Now, we can trace the Jewish money directly to William of Orange. They paid for him to come over to England. They paid for all the propaganda. They basically put him on the throne. And the way he repaid them was to give them the charter to the Bank of England. And that revolution, that British Revolution, they call it the Glorious Revolution, I think. Oh, no, that's the later one, is the Glorious Revolution. But that revolution is what they exported then, the Freemasons did, to France for the French Revolution. And then that tried to export it to Germany and eventually to Russia. And each time they did this, they were perfecting the techniques that they used. And the Freemasons by that time were involved in it as well, because they didn't start till I think after Cromwell's time. Did you find a Freemason link with Cromwell, or was it just after that they began?
No, it was just that Jewish link. I mean, the Freemasons had been going obviously before then, I believe, but they only came to the front really, as far as I can see at the moment, with the Illuminati with the French Revolution, which had been planned, I believe, for a number of years before. But you're quite right about the William of Orange. I haven't got it in front of me at the moment, but I did come across a piece where he did eventually sell us all out for what was quite a paltry sum, to be quite honest. And it said even today, I can remember reading, it said something about that even the Orange Protestants in Ireland today have really no idea just exactly what they were fighting over, celebrating when they're marching. Not one in 10,000 know the true story of that particular going on.
I bet. The Jews are quite proud of the fact that they put him on the throne. It's in Wikipedia that they funded William of Orange. And if you look at it from that moment on, they've all been puppets. We've never had any like Edward Longshanks again that kicked all the Jews out. All we've had is we've had kings that haven't been so bad, and we've had ones that legalized usury, legalized this banking. The excuse that they use with the British people was, look at Netherlands, look at how rich Amsterdam has become, because that was the center of these Jews. Of course, they were lending out their money, making their usury on it, and making vast amounts of money as middlemen, basically. And if you look at this Vanessa Ben Israel's letter, all it's about is the Jews being middlemen. And you don't need a middleman. I don't need a middleman to come between me and you, Dennis, if we're doing some kind of trade deal, do we?
No, but I'm sure if there's money involved, they'd be knocking on the door. This is exactly what they do. I mean, it's a little bit like PayPal, for instance. You know, when they must make, I don't, God knows how many millions from that every week, just by a stroke of a pen. It's just a click of a keyboard.
Well, yeah, they inserted themselves into this, and by that time we had the East India Trade Company. The East India Trade Company said, no, don't bring the Jews in here. Whatever you do, don't bring the Jews in here. They were desperate not to allow the Jews into Britain, but they brought the Jews in, and of course the Jews took over the East India Trading Company. They lent them their money. In this letter it says, we harmlessly lend out the money to people, and we just require a stake in their property. And then the people we've lent the money to can just go away and spend it, and it doesn't mention it again. But I mean, that's stating the way that they do it. They would lend out money to people so that people couldn't pay it back, and they would put a stake on their property so that if they couldn't pay it back, they would take their property. And they ended up owning the East India Trading Company, and that's how come you get your Sassoons and all these other really rich Jews involved in business. And that's what messed up the British Empire, really. And it just became all about making profits, didn't it?
Well, I think it was a mixture of the British military and the Jewish finance joining together at one point to create this empire, which, like you said, I mean, the Sassoons were well involved in the drugging of opium in China. And have grown fantastically rich over these years, you know. I mean, how much money they must have just must be incredible.
Well, yeah, they were able to use the British Army to force people to work, force people to pay the money off to them. And as well, at the same time as this, they were lending money to the Vatican. They got the Rothschilds got the Vatican's money as well. All Peter's pence was used as a security for loans. What does the Vatican need to be getting loans from these Jews for? Basically, through all this loaning and this usury, they've ended up taking over all the establishments, just all the establishment of everything that you can pretty much think of. I know people go against the church, but that's because the church has been infiltrated and taken over by the Jews, same as the governments.
Yeah, the amazing thing is that you know, normal everyday people are just totally unaware of what's going on around them. I mean, they've been so good at covering up the tracks. I mean, by after every war, for instance, like, you know, they tightened everything up. After World War II, they went into Germany, tightened everything up, changed all the textbooks, changed history more or less, and then fed us the result, in which, I used to look at the Second World War just as a continuation of the first, where just after, a couple of weeks of researching now, I tend to look at it as just another war in a world revolution, which has been going on for God knows how many years, like you said, back to the Roman days. It's just incredible. Once you've started to unravel all this, it's like, where does the blood stop flowing?
Well, it's an age-old battle of good against evil, isn't it?
Without a doubt. And the problem is, with European Christianity, I mean, when I talk about Christianity, I mean European Christianity. I'm not talking about the evangelists over in America. It's a different breed altogether. But Second World War was, no doubt, was an attack from Freemasonry from the West and the Communists from the East on a Christian Europe which had been freed, temporarily at least, by the Germans after World War One. That's basically what that situation was. They was going back to put everybody in financial shackles again, which, of course, they did, and this is where we are today. But people are walking around today, and they haven't got any idea what's going on, and that's the great danger, because the ultimate aim is to take us, well, first take out the white race or the Christian culture, which is basically the white race, and then that makes it so much easier then for the rest of the world to fall, and then the rest of the world just becomes enslaved to their teachings, which they only teach about the goyim and the cattle and how they are meant to serve this supremacist so-called race.
It is a battle of good against evil. We've been taught to believe that evil doesn't exist, that there aren't people that are against us. Why would anybody be against us? We give everyone human rights and we give them democracy, and why would anyone be against us? There can't be this conspiracy. Well, we are the good guys. Our governments are the good guys. Well, we know that they're not, and we know that they're doing as much harm as they possibly can to us. They're flooding our nations full of hostile immigrants, raping our children and attacking us and replacing us. Every time I look on the television, I'm seeing that there's another white man that's been replaced. And we see all of this, and people think this has only just happened. Why has this happened? Maybe we need to elect a different party in. Maybe we need to elect Labour in, or maybe we need to elect UKIP in. But it goes far beyond voting for a new politician. We can see this with Donald Trump. I think he genuinely wanted to change things, and now he's got into his position of power, he's realised that he can't. He's beholden to the Jews. America is a client state to the Jews. They hold the strings to everything. If they want him to attack Syria, he's got to attack Syria.
Can I just say that for them people who tend to look at Adolf Hitler as the evil side of it? The guy who put Satan in everybody's back pocket in America was Roosevelt, when he, for the bankers, brought out on the back of the dollar and the eye of Lucifer at the top of the pyramid, and that now is in the back of everybody's wallet or pocket in America. And these are the ones that Hitler was fighting. On the other side of it, you're talking about America today is in the hands of the Jews. I watched a documentary actually on the Cossacks today in Russia. Well, as you know from the greatest story never told, a lot of the Cossacks were sent back, they were beaten back onto trains with baseball bats, sent back to the Soviet Union after fighting with the Germans, and put to death or sent to Siberia. And today, the Cossacks today hold Putin up in the highest regard. Believe you me, I watched this documentary, and they had a bust, these Cossacks had a bust of him as a Roman emperor, and demanded that he be the president of Russia for life. And he's given these Cossacks, who have always been under the Soviet Union, the communists have been downtrodden and, the back end of everything. And he's given a new lease of life, and I noticed this a few years ago and thought, what's going on? Because I knew the history of the Cossacks. And today, they're a growing strength in Russia. And actually, we're happily burning an American flag and saying that we will not be going through what we went last time, which I've been taught to the young Cossacks as I speak, because they need to know their history as well. And I'm quite sure they clued up what went on in World War II, and and where the world is going, because at this moment in time, obviously, this is the only nation on Earth which is, at least upholding the family traditions of Christian Europe.
Well, they know what it's like to be ruled by the Jews. They remember what it was like because they've had it recently. We've had our history, it's been cut out what the Jews have done to us. We no longer hear about the Jews kidnapping Christian children, crucifying them, draining them of their blood, all the crimes that they've done against our people over the years. The fact that they're the ones behind the banks.
I mean, you're exactly right.
Yeah, it sounds crazy, but you look at the facts. It's the highest courts in the land found them guilty. They confessed to this crime, and yet we are taught today in the newspapers that this was a libel against the Jews. This was a blood libel. They were never found innocent. They were found guilty. Nobody's lying when they say that the Jews did this human sacrifice of Gentile children. And that's why they were kicked out of Britain back then in 1290, because they hadn't even been in the country for a century before these children started disappearing for their blood sacrifice rituals. And on the top of that, you had the Jews buying everything up, loaning out money. And money was was not something that was very often used. It was all IOUs among communities. That's what would be used as a form of money. And then you've got the Jews coming in, offering these coins that can be used, and we'll loan you the money before the harvest, and we'll sell you this vodka, we'll sell you this alcohol. The farmers weren't used to that. They were used to somebody not loaning them the money if they didn't think they were going to get it back. And these Jews would lend out money hoping not to get it back so that they could take over the farm, take over the buildings, everything.
That's
as collateral.
Scam. Exactly the same.
That's exactly the same way that the banks work to this day, only now they don't even have to hand out clipped coins. They can just hand over a bit of paper, just tap it on a computer screen. There we go. We've just created that money. We'll lend you that.
Yeah.
Only when you can't pay it back, we'll take your business, we'll take your house. And then that's physical collateral then that they've taken.
Yeah, and it's like people don't know about it because the media don't report it. The number of houses what's been lost in this country of people fighting to keep their heads above water because of this usury has been unreal. I mean, I looked into that in the previous documentary. But, I mean, today, they've got so many scams going. I mean, like I said, I don't know, the rivers of money must be flowing in that direction because they've been concentrating all this for thousands of years, and they've got it down to a fine art. I mean, at the end of the day, people just have got to get wise to it.
Well, I think the problem is some people do work it out, and they work out this banking scam, but they don't want to be racist, so they ignore the ethnic component to it. I've got books that are written by Jews. I've got one, I think it's called Debt, first 1,000 years or first 10,000 years or something, and he totally manages to leave out any role of the Jews in it. Completely and utterly.
It's amazing. I've seen one or two little documentaries lately. There's no mention at all. I mean, for instance, in the Russian Revolution and the French Revolution, not a mention.
They'll just leave that out, and people don't think that there's an ethnic component to all of this, and there is an ethnic component. If you look at the majority of all the people involved in the Bolshevik Revolution and the commissars afterwards, they're all Jews. If you look at all the bankers, they are all Jews. If you look at all the top people in government, if they're not Jews, then they're married to them. This whole idea of not being racist because we don't want to hurt the feelings of these other races, that is all specifically so that we can't point out the Jews that are involved in all of this.
This is where the anti-Semitic laws come in immediately after the Russian Revolution. And they're coming in play now to countries which are starting to become awake after World War II. You can see this now, people are getting more and more threatened with it. So it's another tactic they've honed.
I mean, they're very clever with it. They try to make out that it's for our own good. It's like this letter from Manasseh Ben Israel that's trying to tell Cromwell and the English people that it's going to be greatly to their benefit to invite these people in that don't know how to do anything else other than add an extra cost on the price of things. They admit they can't create anything, they can't farm anything, but they are very good at putting the prices up.
I'm sure they have somebody sitting in a cupboard somewhere who comes up with these ideas for, like, say, insurance and things like that, which has changed dramatically. Car insurance, for instance, has changed dramatically over, you know, the last decade, where now it's not, you know, actually paying for insurance, you're taking out a loan. So even if, you know, you've got to sell your car or whatever, you've still got this loan on your back, which they call insurance.
Well, they're all involved with that as well, aren't they? And look at the way they'll sell that. Oh, you want to be insured in case you have an accident, and then you've got all the suing involved and all the lawyers involved in that. And again, the Jews are all heavily involved in the judicial system. With these hate speech laws, you don't want to see hatred. You don't want to see people hating people on the streets. And think how insulting it is to use that language. They'll try and sell it as if it's a good thing for us not to be able to criticise certain minorities, as if it's a good thing for us to become massively in debt and end up losing our houses, our very homes, giving them over to the bank. And they'll make out that that's a wonderful thing. It's like payday loans. Hey, look how wonderful this Wonga loan is. You can have the money now, but it's got 8,000% interest on it. So you better pay it back by the end of the month, or else it's going to grow to such an amount you can never pay it back. And yet all the time it's promoted as if it's a good thing for us. And our people don't seem to be able to see through it, Dennis.
No, well, I think the problem is, like, it doesn't come en masse. It isn't like a whole street or a whole town lose the house. It's just maybe one individual in thousands. But when you all across the country, when this is going on, obviously people involved are really hurting. There's been a lot of pain and misery through all this, not with just the wars, but with the transactions, the financial transactions that you just pointed out, a lot of misery. And but the point is, history's always seemed to have gone in a cycle, and so when this cycle ends and a more negative one for these people turns into the wheel turns into motion, that is when they're going to suffer. I mean, you know, I dare say they have been persecuted over the years, and this is the reason why.
They won't admit it, though. They just
no, they won't admit
it.
Not because that then owns up to their own deceit.
I don't think they're able to see it. They can't do. They think their behaviour is natural because it comes naturally to them.
Well, so I think it is, yeah. I think it's parasitical, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they assume other people are going to be thinking in the same way. I'm sure they do. Yeah. They assume everyone's going to be
identical
material.
Things. It's like every Jew that's born instinctively knows the road they take. I mean, the all road leads to world domination, and it's like they all change the name. You know, they're not against changing the religion. They're not against marrying into other families. They have no basis of where, say, ourselves, you know, any nationalism. They're just wanderers, and they'll do what they do, and need to do, rather, to take over that host nation, which they've probably been invited into or they've been helped into for some whatever reason. And then they'll marry into that into that race, and then a couple of generations passes, and then there's no telling who they are. But they know who they are, and they know that I'm sure from birth, the instinct, I'm sure they all know the goal in life.
Well, we can see them doing this today with Zuckerberg, the head of Facebook, marrying that Chinese woman. A lot of the Jews are marrying into these Chinese aristocracy because China's now got so much money. Yeah, they've always been slightly involved over there with communism because it's communist China, but now they've got huge riches over there. They're marrying into that. And Zuckerberg will be having these Chinese-looking kids that will be brought up Jewish. He may not have married a Jewish woman, so they won't be looked at as being Orthodox Jews or religious Jews, but they're still going to have that Jewish blood. They're still going to be
that mentality.
The new aristocracy, and they will marry Jewish wives, so they have Jewish children. That's the way that it goes. And China will end up with a Jewish aristocracy, the same as we've ended up with a Jewish aristocracy throughout Europe. And the people that really put a stop to that was the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church made laws that no Jew could marry a Christian. And it was Constantine, or just after Constantine, in the 3rd or the 4th century, that that law was made. And Adolf Hitler was still referring to it as that was the law of the Holy Roman Empire yeah. in the 1930s. It brings it up in one of their films.
Racist, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does today, yeah. but it didn't back then.
But there was a reason for it, and this is what people don't understand. You need these extreme measures to stop these extreme activities. What's detrimental to your own race? I mean, another piece I read about, I think it was Amtel Rothschild, who was talking to the people, planning the French Revolution, and he was openly talking about how they learned from the English Revolution to say that it took too long and all this kind of care, and we've got it now down to a fine art. And it's like I say, they've been at it for so long now, it is a fine art.
Right, Michael Jones shows that. He shows how the Freemasons, they perfected what they'd just finished doing in England. They then exported that over to France. And in the media, they were condemning what was going on in France. Oh, this is terrible. But it was their own secret service that was doing it, that was involved in it. Because by that time, the English aristocracy had been taken over. And then you look at that Rothschild banking thing. I mean, what time is that? That was Napoleon, wasn't it?
1700 somewhere, weren't it?
Took over the bank. So when was the French Revolution? Was that after Napoleon?
No, I think it was. I think Napoleon came to power after the revolution, but I think he was involved in it, wasn't he?
So it's all around about the same time. Is this big takeover? Took over England. Took over France. Took over Russia. Tried to take over Germany. And Germany was too strong for them. But by that time, they already had America.
In certain parts.
Yeah, we could see they had where was it? In Bavaria, I think it was, wasn't it? They had a communist state for a few months. And one of the things they did there was legalise child sex, child marriage, legalise homosexuality. That was one of their test runs for all this depravity, and they realised that they couldn't introduce that straight away. So they put that on hold for a while, and then they're bringing that all back out again now, encouraging all that again now.
Well, that's right. Well, interestingly enough, I mean, I finished an episode this week, although it's going to probably be the third or fourth episode, so, I didn't release it. And that involved the Dutch banker, which... Somebody from the chat room sent a link, I think, and showing he was actually whistleblowing on the people that he used to work for or work with. He used to handle all the money and was very good at what he did and was really well paid. And he went on to talk about, believe it or not, what we were talking about last week, the protocols. And he was advising everybody to read, although it's a boring document, he said, but you've got to read it to understand exactly what's going on today. And that's exactly like we said last week, and Henry Ford had said the same. And once Henry Ford had read them, went a great deal his fortune went to try to publicize it to the world. And of course he did finance Hitler in a lot of ways as well, because he knew that the Germans had to be armed, especially after they'd been stripped of all arms after World War One. With an 100,000 army, which was nothing, and so all this comes from the fact that these protocols were actually came to light. I mean, the original title of the protocols was called the Jewish Peril, which to me it should have stayed the Jewish Peril, because that's exactly what it is.
Well, I don't think they're boring to read or anything like that. I mean, they're fairly easy to read, and they make sense straight away. And you can see that is exactly what's going on. And you can see the way that they control things just by looking at this French election that's going on at the moment with this Macron, who is the banker's candidate, whose face is on every...
How do you have a banker's candidate?
Yeah, he's on every French newspaper. And yet they're trying to portray him as being the alternative. they were all the rest of them were against him when they were competing with him, and now that it's just him and Marine Le Pen, every single one of those other parties' candidates is endorsing Macron, who they were against. It just shows you that every single one of them is a puppet, and they're all working for these banks, and the banks in their turn are all working for these Jews. And it all goes back to these charters that were given them. That Bank of England then went on to become the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and that is linked up with all the central banks throughout the world. They all go back to that Bank of England, and it's written into the Bank of England Charter that it's above all the laws. It's the same as the same powers as the Crown, which is the king, the monarch, the one that actually makes all the laws. So how can you take the one who makes the laws to court? You can't. So the banks are above the law. They're not national. It's not our money that's in there. It's private fund, basically, for the people that were given
to this day. We don't know who owns the Bank of England. Well, yeah, we have an idea, but we don't know officially.
You can look in the laws of England, and it tells you that no employee of the Bank of England, the International Monetary Fund, or the World Bank can ever break a law. They can't. The City of London, which is basically the Bank of England, and the rest of them,
itself,
is above the law.
Right.
And a whole lot is there. And that's what Hitler went against. And God bless his soul, he defeated them. He defeated them. The country was German again.
It was free.
It was free. And the countries that Germany liberated were free as well. I think that's why France has got such a strong nationalist movement there with the National Front, is because they had a taste of that. Even though France was occupied by an occupying force, they weren't hostile to the French. They treated them really well. If you look at the pictures...
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
you know, they did to the British now.
In the Channel Islands.
Well, that was the only time when the Germans were in the Channel Islands. That was the only time that no child abuse went on in the orphanage.
Yeah, no doubt.
They put a stop to that.
Freemasonry was shut down, which I had in the documentary as well, when he was whinging about the mess they made.
We've got to find it. Well, you know, this is the beauty of what's happening today with the internet, is that Hitler's ghost really is rising from the grave, which is exactly what he said would happen in his last testament, I believe. And he said that his spirit would rise from the grave, and it is rising from the grave. And he's becoming a symbol for all forms of rebellion. And because of that, it draws people in to research it more. And when they do research it more, they find that that's the answer. If you look at this truth movement and the people that are, really good people that are helping out the people that are having their homes taken off them, that are trying all these legal wrangles so that they can get the people to keep their homes and beat the banks. If only they would look at things through from the ethnic perspective, they would see that the people they are up against are the Jews. But they don't want to look at it as an ethnicity. They just want to look at it as, oh, these banks have turned people into persons, and because of that they've taken away our rights, and they get all caught up in all this obfuscation. And there are Jews involved in it as well, which deliberately try to obfuscate things from the people so that they can't realise who it is that's really behind all of this. But it's been the same people all along.
It takes a lifetime to learn all this, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's been the same people all along. You know, we're taught that in the New Testament and the Old Testament, if you know enough about it. It's the same people right the way through history. Good against evil. Going right back to where you looked it up in Babylon in your last series.
Yeah.
This is their aim, is to wipe us out, turn us into a slave race, turn us into this mongrel race that Kudinov Kalergi was talking about.
And this is what people are totally unaware of. They're just completely ignorant to it because of the control and the anti-Semitic laws and the feeling they can't be racist and they look on a nationalist now as an extremist. All this mind game has all come into play, and it's totally left them above everybody, just completely laughing at us.
Well, you can see this going back to his William Cromwell when he took over with his Commonwealth. I hate the way that he called it the Commonwealth, because you think of a Commonwealth as a good thing, you know, the Commonwealth between the nations. But Cromwell's Commonwealth was the New World Order of its day. It was invading Ireland, invading Scotland, forcing them to go along with his laws, forcing them to go along with his religious laws, banning Christmas. The guy was a real hypocrite. It was basically the start of the humanism that we have today, the worship of the human. And a lot of it was worshipping these Jews because, as I say, they'd been given these corrupted Bible versions, making the Jews out to be wonderful. We see the same thing today with the Scofield Bible, which is, instead of having the word Israel in the Old Testament, it's put the word Jews to try and make people think that these Jews are wonderful people and they should be given Israel. And the same thing was going on back then. These Jews were publishing their own translations of the Bible, and the British people were thinking these Jews were wonderful. We should be going to them to ask them to translate our Bible. I mean, who is can you think of anyone worse to go to help you translate the Bible than the people that killed Christ?
Exactly.
That's what they did, though.
And they're proud of it.
Yeah. That's what they did.
Of course, they've got the backup of Hollywood as well. I came across a video of a friend of mine who was on TV declaring that he didn't believe in God, Morgan Freeman. And he was obviously a Luciferian. And the number of films and the type of films that he's been offered in the past couple of years, it just goes beyond it all. You know, it's totally a Luciferian agenda. One of the films is Lucy, called Lucy, which is totally Luciferian in its plot. It wasn't such a great film, but, you know, and these people are rewarded. And like this banker said, you know, he went on to say about how these people are mainly Luciferian, and the hatred that they have for us is unflinching. The absolute haters and want to destroy us whenever and as soon as they can. It's just, and this goes back to this world domination, what they want, and the hatred for Christianity.
Well, I think that that hatred of us, I think that when they became part of the aristocracy, I think that sort of filtered into things, and that's when you ended up having a divide between the lower classes and the upper classes. If you look at Charles I, the one that Cromwell beheaded, he was a really good guy. I don't know if it was on this podcast last week or another one that I've done where I read out some of these laws that he actually had. And he had these really good laws, and if people stuck to them, life would be really good for them. It just showed you that he was a really moral, really good man. And the peasants and the poor, they loved him. They thought he was fantastic. They didn't want him to be killed. They didn't want him to be executed. But these corrupted aristocracy that was around William Cromwell and the Jews that had funded him, they wanted that king gone. And he walked into the Houses of Parliament and to arrest them, to say what the hell is going on, because he knew that his power was going to be usurped from the king and it was going to be given to the City of London and the banks. And he knew that that was what democracy was going to do. And that's pretty much what he said. This democracy is going to usurp my power. And once it's been taken away from the king, it's going to go to somebody who doesn't deserve it, somebody who doesn't care about the British people. That's exactly what happened. He stood up for us, and we killed him.
It sounds very similar to Edward, the king who was replaced just before the war, where I was looking into him at one point and said that he went to Wales and all the walls were whitewashed, but he took a detour. Ended up at this Welsh lady's house, asked to come in if he could have a cup of tea. He wanted to see what the real world was like. And this woman says that you could come in, but there's nothing in the fridge. I can't offer you anything. And it was then that he realised that, you know, all this money, which has always been available for all the wars and everything else, was suddenly being, you know, his own nation was being deprived. And the angle from where this was coming from was the fact that he didn't want to be hanging around in a country where he knew they could well be used as a puppet.
Well, if you look back in history, we've had lots and lots of great kings. We've had bad ones, but we've had great ones that have so-and-so the great written after their name. And I can't think of any prime ministers or presidents that have come anywhere near that. And the thing is, you take your chances with a king, but it's an old institution, and a king isn't a king without a people. Prime Minister can come from any nation, but you couldn't have a king of the British who wasn't British.
And he should be the ultimate nationalist, really, shouldn't he, by rights?
Yeah, it goes to ethnicity, and you've even got the eugenics involved with it as well, because the king should be the best. This is why the king would go out there fighting. It wasn't up. I think it was only 400 or 500 years ago when the king was still going to be out there at the front fighting with his men, because he was the best fighter. He'd been taught to be the best fighter, taught to be the best hunter, given the best education, so that we had one of us that was given the absolute very best of everything, who was then supposed to be the very best of us. So he would be the best negotiator, he would be the best fighter, he'd be the most handsome, he'd be the most just. You could appeal to him if you felt that you were being done over by the nobles. It was the king that you would appeal to. And when we had King Alfred the Great, apparently he hanged 100 judges for being corrupt, and he would sit in on the court cases because he didn't want to see the poor being ripped off. You compare that with these prime ministers today, what they're doing to the poor, what they're doing to the disabled, what they're doing to the young. They got no concerns whatsoever for the people. All they're interested in is serving their banker overlords.
Mammon. Yeah, Mammon, yeah.
And all that money should be ours.
You see, you can never get enough of it. Like I said, I hate to think how much money flows their way every day as it is. I mean, some people say that, you know, he must have been funded, Hitler. Not really, when you think that, you know, all he has to do, like, is cut off that supply of usury and all the other angles that they had running and direct it towards, the German government itself, which then went to, the proper needs. It doesn't take that long for a country to get back on its feet again, because, I mean, you look at America and the amount of money that they give away every day to, the Institutes of Freemasonry and Israel itself. And if all that was stopped, it wouldn't take them that long to be the real powerhouse, without the debt in the world.
Well, Hitler was able to issue his own credit notes, German credit notes, backed up by the workers. And internally, they were able to use those. So they didn't have to borrow money from anywhere. They could just use their own credit notes to loan out money for building projects. And once the building projects were finished, the credit notes would come back in as the houses were sold, and it would be zeroed. And there was no need to put any usury on it, no need to put interest on there, no need for any middleman. This job that the Jew invented, being a middleman, the merchant. I mean, that's all they've ever been is a merchant.
Yeah. I think if you look up in dubious trades, as we say.
I think if you look up the word Canaanite, you'll see that it actually means merchant in the Old Testament. I mean, that's all they've ever been is merchants. If you look at these old pictures of them, you'll see them carrying things, which is merchandise for them to sell. That's all they've ever done, is buy things from people and then sell them on to other people and make a profit on the top. And one of the ways to do that is, if there's a scarcity of something in the old days, if there was a scarcity of something, the king would subsidize it because the people would need it. But now, if there's a scarcity of something, the Jew will put the price up. That's the way that they would do it.
Rewards, isn't it?
Yeah, they would engineer scarcity of goods that people needed so that they could then put the price up. And that's the same as this fiddling the market that they do now, to put the prices up on the shares and drop the prices so that they can buy things cheaply. All of it is so corrupt. And it all goes back to allowing the Jews into our countries and allowing them to take control of our economies. And in Britain, it really goes back to William Cromwell and him killing the king. We're getting near to the end of the podcast, Dennis. I don't know if you want to let people know where they can find your work just before we finish.
Yeah, well, at the moment, like I say, I'm deep in research for the new documentary, but The Communism by the Back Door is available on YouTube. And The Greatest Story Never Told, which I believe is the 34th a documentary of all time on IMDb, which is wonderful to hear. And you can catch that at the website greatstorynevertold.tv.
Yeah, that's wonderful news, that, Dennis. Don't forget, everyone, check out countercurrents.com for Richard Edmonds' piece on World War II. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week, same time, same place, with more Truth Will Out Radio for you. We hope you have a great weekend.
Radio Aryan.